your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got several things we're going to be covering this evening. We've got some things on Tucker Carlson. He interviewed a Russian that was reported in that BuzzFeed thing they call the dossier, the Steele dossier, and I think he ended up suing BuzzFeed. And then we're going to move on to some other things. But let me read from an article that appeared back the time that when this Russian, Alexei Gorbarov, he filed suit in Florida against BuzzFeed around the February of 2017. And it says in this article on Politico by Peter Stern, I'll quote it directly here. Russian technology executive Alexei Gorbarov filed suit in Florida against BuzzFeed and its editor-in-chief Ben Smith on Friday, alleging that the news organization defamed him when it published an unverified dossier about Donald Trump that mentioned his name. He's asking for at least $15,000 in damages. In response to the lawsuit, BuzzFeed on Friday evening issued an apology and said that it had redacted Gorbarov's name and the names of his companies from the dossier. We have redacted Mr. Gorbarov's name from the published dossier and apologize for including it, BuzzFeed spokesman Matt Mitzenthal told Politico in a statement. CNN, Money, and McClatchy were the first news organization to report on the existence of the lawsuit against BuzzFeed. Gorbarov is the CEO of XBT Holdings, a technology company based in Europe. The unverified dossier that BuzzFeed published, which was reportedly compiled by a former British spy, alleged that Russian intelligence had recruited Gorbarov as an asset as part of its hacking campaign to aid Donald Trump. When it published the dossier on January 10th, BuzzFeed said that its reporters had attempted to verify allegations contained in the dossier, but it had been unable to do so. However, Gorbarov claims in his suit that BuzzFeed reporters never tried to contact him to verify any of the information. Well, isn't that funny? Now, recently, just within this last week, Tucker Carlson interviewed Alexei Gorbarov and his attorney, and we've got that clip, and we're going to play that next. So listen to this very carefully and see what you think.
Well, the Russia investigation has been going on for quite some time now, and so far it hasn't proved any of the allegations that gave birth to it in the first place. But if you'll remember back to the beginning, all of this was justified in part by the publication of a dossier, a totally unverified dossier, filled with salacious allegations about Donald Trump and many others in his orbit. One person who was targeted was a man named Alex Gorbarov and his company, XBT Holdings. The dossier claims that XBT assisted in the hacking of the Democratic Party leadership. Now, Gorbarov, who denies this, is suing BuzzFeed for libel for releasing the dossier with his name in it. Alex Gorbarov and his attorney, Val Gervitz, join us tonight. Thank you both for coming on.
Thank you.
Alex, you're denying, of course, that you played any role in the hacking of the Democratic Party. Tell me how the inclusion of your name in this dossier has affected your life and your business.
Imagine that in one day, you moved 16 years ago out of Russia. You start your business in the European Union in the United States. And you work so hard to build company from scratch. And you have hundreds of employees who work over you. Their families depend on you. And one day you just wake up and see that somebody is ruining your reputation and try to destroy your business by telling the criminal that you did something against democracy in the United States. And imagine that, like, you have to explain to your grandmother that you're not criminal because she news about you on the television. You have to explain, and I know that you have a daughter, so you have to explain to your 17 years old daughter that you're not the criminal because she sees this in the news. This affects me on multiple levels. You cannot even imagine. Yeah, I still have this pressure every day, and I fight with it on every level.
So did you do anything that was alleged in the dossier? Did you have any role in stealing information from the Democratic National Committee servers? Do you work for Russian intelligence? Have you taken orders from Vladimir Putin to destroy our democracy?
Of course not. I did nothing.
Why do you think your name was in this dossier?
It's a good question, and honestly, I don't know. And I hope that all court cases which I'm doing now against BuzzFeed and against Christopher Steele in the United Kingdom will help me to find out the answer on this question.
Mr. Gervitz, have you received any call from the special prosecutor's office summoning you and your client in for a conversation with the Mueller team?
We have not. And in fact, at the beginning of this lawsuit, Mr. Gubarev made it clear that he's willing to cooperate with any law enforcement agency. Notably, no one has contacted us, which tells us that at least the law enforcement agency does not take the allegations against Alex seriously. But he...
We've had a couple different Russia investigations going on for more than a year. Your client's name is in the dossier that forms the basis of these allegations, and nobody has called you? Nobody has called you?
No. No one. Not a single person has called, and this is the only person in this entire sordid story that has gone on record to be willing to speak to anyone under oath and has given testimony under oath, unlike pretty much everyone else that has been dodging depositions. We just completed Christopher Steele's deposition in London last week. He ran out of appeals, but he certainly fought hard not to give one. Fusion GPS is still fighting us. I think they'll be unsuccessful and they will have to give evidence, but they are certainly trying hard to avoid giving evidence.
And so very quickly, we're almost out of time, but did you get to the bottom of how your client's name wound up in the Steele dossier? Do you have any idea?
We do not. We still have not found a single iota of reason for him to be there, but we're digging. We're continuing to look, and we hope that at the end of the day, we will find out.
And yet this dossier has turned our country upside down. Okay. It's very interesting and helpful to hear your side of it. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'll tell you what, that Steele dossier is just a put-up job. Anyway, coming up next was an interview of the summer of 2016 with Charles Krauthammer. And Charles Krauthammer was a commentator and so forth with Fox. And of all people that were still working for Fox at the time, Megyn Kelly interviewed him. And they were talking about a recent immigration bill, actually executive order, and actually resulted in a court case before it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court turned it back to the lower appeals court and on a tie vote. And so it just reaffirmed the appeals case. But we're going to let you listen to this interview between Megyn Kelly and Charles Krauthammer, both on Fox, and what Charles Krauthammer says is that Obama's not intellectually honest. So this is pretty important information. This 2 years ago, and Obama's hasn't gotten any more honest, that's for sure. So listen to this carefully.
We begin with Charles Krauthammer, Fox News contributor and author of the book Things That Matter. Charles, great to see you. The president, whether he acknowledges it explicitly, was dealt a significant blow today by this high court.
Yes, and it's not the first time. This is the culmination of a long string of decisions issued by the Supreme Court and by lower courts, which have admonished this president for clearly overstepping the boundaries of his authority. In this case, it was quite egregious, and that's what the Fifth Circuit had said. This was a sweeping decision that would have empowered these illegal immigrants, and whether you agree with the policy or not, it was simply not in the president's power to do it. And just because the president wants to do something that Congress will not do, it does not give him the authority to do it.
I mean, he doesn't,
exactly
he doesn't
as
seem
in
to get
case.
That. He doesn't seem to get
no,
that.
He doesn't.
22
right.
times, 22 times he came out and said to the community pushing for immigration reform, I can't. I've done all I can do. If I take the next step, which is the thing that just got struck down today, I'll be overstepping my authority. I'm not a king. And then he did it and never, ever explained how he found the authority that he'd been saying for months he lacked.
Well, I agree with you. That was astonishingly intellectually dishonest, because he himself had explained why he couldn't do it beyond his authority, and then, as you say, he decided otherwise, and he decided otherwise simply because it was a kind of what the hell.
But Charles, my office. Point is now to come out and just, oh, this ruling, and, you know,
yeah.
it's because they didn't appoint or confirm Merrick Garland. It's like, you yourself said 24 times you couldn't do this. So let's not blame the courts.
Look, with him, it's in for a dime, in for a dollar. He had a year to go in his administration, year and a half, and decided, I'll go for it. Either he'll win. And look, it wasn't clear that there'd be anybody out there to challenge him. This challenge had to come from the states. It mm-hmm. did not come from anywhere else.
The president came out today and said, look, I had to. I had to do it because those Republicans refused to act. He doesn't acknowledge that, of course, the Democrats controlled all three branches. So they controlled the House, they controlled the Senate, they controlled the White House. For the first 2 years of his presidency, he didn't prioritize this. He prioritized Obamacare and broke a direct promise to this community that he would prioritize this instead. So he violates the promise. Then today he comes out and says, I had to do it because no one would act.
But this idea that he had to do it, I mean, that's Hugo Chavez talk. You can't have to do it. It's not a dictatorship. You can only do it if Congress passes the law. A president is restrained by, I mean, these are elementary school, you know, this is sort of high school civics. And that the president would overstep it wantonly is remarkable. And as I say again and again, remember with the recess appointment case, the NLRB, he was admonished by the court unanimously. You cannot decide when Congress is in session, when it isn't. And that's something that he's completely ignored, rather serenely, and is not, he doesn't even try to be intellectually consistent.
Mm. It's amazing to watch. I mean, how many times this president has been brushed back for overstepping his executive authority. The same person who lectured us on how he was a constitutional law professor, and he understood the Constitution. And unlike President George W. Bush, he wasn't going to try to do ends around it, and, you know, an end around it. And here we stand, yet another Supreme Court decision coming down against him. Charles, great to see you.
My pleasure.
Okay, that was Megyn Kelly interviewing Charles Krauthammer about 2 years ago, about June of 2016. And let me fill you in a little bit more about that Supreme Court ruling. The Supreme Court, this is about 2 years ago, but we're going back a little bit to set this up to show you what Obama and them, they're organizing against Trump. And Obama is at the center of the organization to topple him any way they can. And anyway, this is a direct article from the New York Times, June 23rd, 2016. And this was written shortly after the Supreme Court ruling, or non-ruling, you could say. And this comes out of the New York Times. The Supreme Court announced on Thursday that it had deadlocked in a case challenging President Obama's immigration plan, effectively ending what Obama had hoped would become one of his central legacies. The program would have shielded as many as 5 million undocumented immigrants from deportation and allowed them to legally work in the United States. The 4-4 tie, which left in place an appeals court ruling blocking the plan, amplified the contentious election year debate over the nation's immigration policy and presidential power. When the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case in January, it seemed poised to issue a major ruling on presidential power that did not materialize, but the court's action, which established no precedent and included no reasoning, was nevertheless perhaps his most important statement this term. The decision was just 9 words long. The judgment is affirmed by an equally divided court, but its consequences will be vast, said Walter Dittlinger, who was acting Solicitor General in the Clinton administration. Seldom have the hopes of so many been crushed by so few words. Well, this shows that this shows how Obama was using the power of executive action or executive, you know, privilege, you could say, executive orders and so forth, to circumvent or try to circumvent. But in the end, the court got him on this one. Now, Trump is using these executive orders in a similar way to dismantle what Obama has been put up. So this argument goes on, and it's a continual argument about the imperial presidency. You know what I mean? And I don't like an imperial presidency. I would rather Congress to be honest and to have honest debates on these subjects and issue honest, you know what I mean, resolutions of these matters before, you know, the legislature and so forth. But we're not going to get that. So these presidents go off and do what they want to. It so happens that if you're for Obama, you agreed with those executive, you know, argument back then. Executive orders, and of course now if you're for Trump, you're going to be are you in favor of what he's doing, dismantling Obama's much of his administration. So this is a continual battle, and I still can't say I support an imperial president, because whenever you give power to more and more power, and you can just appoint the power of a pen, I think Obama said that one time, it's not good. So anyway, that's to be, of course, continually debated, so to speak. And here's a clip of Obama now being talked about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And it's on Lou Dobbs, and he has as his guest Paul Sperry. And they're talking about Obama organizing, okay? Organizing for Action. It's a group that he's been supporting, and how dangerous that group can be. So coming up in just a moment here, we'll have that, and we'll play that clip for you. And Lou Dobbs interviewing Paul Sperry, New York Post reporter, and they're going to talk about Obama and Organizing for Action that he's operating out of his mansion there in Washington, D.C. So listen to this closely.
Well, joining me now, Paul Sperry, New York Post columnist, author of The Great American Bank Robbery. And he is writing on what is the resistance, the shadow government being formed by Barack Obama. And first, Paul, thank you very much, and my congratulations on outstanding reporting. I wonder to what degree the national liberal media will even pay an ounce of attention. Will they have the courage, the principle, to report on the things that you and I are talking about here tonight?
Well, of course not. I mean, you got an Obama-friendly media, and they're going to try and cover this up and keep it on the QT as long as they can, so that Obama can get this, like I was calling it in the column, a shadow government, build this up. I don't think Republicans know what they're up against here. He's quietly building this shadow opposition government to sabotage Trump and Republicans as well and their policies, while at the same time saving his own legacy. And he's doing all this through a radical Alinsky group that he founded called Organizing for Action, OFA.
Right.
And they've got an army of agitators, and they are going to they're fanning out. They're going to hit Republicans even harder next week when they go home for recess back to their home districts.
Right. And we're watching some of that unfold in the congressional town hall meetings. Some of it being styled as Republicans and conservatives rising up against their Republican or conservative representatives, which is utter nonsense, as we both know. How serious do you believe this is? We're talking about, as you suggest in the column, something north of 30,000 people in OFA, and you know, they didn't even tip their hat. It could have been Organizing for America, but it had to be for action. Where is this headed?
Right. Well, they took it out of the Obama campaign in 2012. It was part of that campaign, and they turned it into a 501c4 so they don't have to show their donors. And what they're doing, so basically starts at a training center, and they put these aren't like the rabble from Occupy Wall Street right. or even Black Lives Matter. These are professionally trained agitators. They're schooled in Alinsky's Rules for Radicals tactics at a program that lasts 6 weeks. And that's about 32,000 who've gone through that, over 32,000. They've got another 25,000 who are under training now, and they've got another big training summit coming up in March. And we haven't seen the worst of these protests. These are really going to hit hard. But Obama's the guy who's behind all this. He's the mastermind. If you look at his website, down in the little print, his new website,
right.
post-presidency, little agate type down there, two organizations listed. One is, I don't know if you can see this, OFA,
right.
Organizing for Action. The other is the Obama Foundation. And eventually, he wants to merge them. And if they can get the DNC, which Obama wants to get his guy Tom Perez, this radical civil rights chief he had,
right.
in the helm at the DNC, you get all this together. And then they get the proprietary database of the voters from OFA, which is licensed, and they've never shared that before with the DNC. You get the email lists, millions of Obama supporters from OFA, and you get the donor lists. And once the DNC gets that, you have a superstructure. And that's going to be a formidable organizing infrastructure.
And around that organizing superstructure that will be unprecedented, you already have many, if not most, of the technology. The large technology firms are already in alliance with him, as is the national left-wing media, as is the national left-wing academia, our colleges and universities, and of course the left-wing media. So it is an extraordinary development, and they mean business. When it comes to obstructing and bringing down this administration. Paul, we would like you to come back as soon as you can and to continue the discussion on this, because this is the critical issue right now, I believe, facing the country. Paul
Stewart. That's right. That's right.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Obama and them are trying to bring about a world communist state, and they're trying to convert and transform America into communism. And let's don't mince words here. Let's don't use the word socialism. We've got a mixed economy already of some free market, open market stuff, and socialism already. So they're trying to take us further to the left. I think this recent Cortez's election in the primary up in New York would foretell what the extreme Democrats are trying to do, along with Tom Perez, National Democratic Committee chairman there. And so they're trying to transform America into a communist state. And they've got, when you go back to the Fabian Society, I'm going to put up a stained glass window, but I'll talk about it a little bit later. But let's get into what can be done here, okay? I'm going to make some closing comments on all these things here later towards the end of this broadcast. But what can we do to fend off these attacks? Well, Alex Jones and Roger Stone have come up with some very, very interesting things about 9/11 that might possibly be used to fend off these continuing attacks by Mueller and so forth. So listen to this conversation earlier this week between Alex Jones and Roger Stone.
Trump's taking the gloves off. For too long, the early Trump attorneys' piece of legal advice was bend over and hand Robert Mueller the Vaseline. Turn over everything. Waive all executive privilege. Give Mueller millions and millions and millions of privilege.
Make him God. Let him violate all these laws.
Right. Ignore his use of material from FISA warrants, which is still the linchpin of this whole scandal, what Rosenstein struggles to cover up today, what is being used to harass me and Paul Manafort and others. So this tells me Trump is going to war. It is essential the American people know who and what Mr. Mueller is. It is not us claiming this. You can go online, look at the terrific story about by Howie Carr about how Robert Mueller, as U.S. attorney, let three Italian men rot in a jail who he knew had nothing to do with a mob murder there in order to cover up for paid mafia informants who worked for Whitey Bulger. That's extraordinary.
Let me give you the biggest news concerning the fight with the deep state that I have covered in a long, long time. I've got a lot of good contacts inside Trump world at the highest levels. And now that Kelly is receding towards being put out to pasture, those contacts have been heating up and have been particularly revealing. So let me give you bombshell, first look, information with myself and Roger Stone right now. It's on Infowars.com. It's on Newswars.com. I've tweeted it out as well. It's a Paul Joseph Watson story. I relayed the information directly to him. Trump to go after Mueller for 9/11 Saudi cover-up. Now, you'll remember in January of this year, here is the Leanne McAdoo report on that. Next year's news today, or the news of 6 months from now today, Mueller's 9/11 cover-up connection. There's Leanne McAdoo's report on that. And it's been in local Florida papers and other places that Mueller ordered the cover-up that Congress knew. FBI found direct ties between 9/11 hijackers and Saudis living in Florida. Congress kept it dark. That's all the stuff we covered, how they got bin Laden out of the country, how they protected him, and who gave the orders in the Justice Department to do that. This goes to the Clintons, the Bushes, the Muellers, the Comeys, the entire deep state. Okay? So that is all about to come out. And so when you see some of the families of 9/11 victims on Tucker Carlson saying Mueller ordered that we couldn't have our lawsuit, he shut it down, he had the FBI not release the information, that is just the doorway to this. And so what I'm relaying to you is Trump, regardless of what the deep state does, is going to bring everything out. But he had to first get some Supreme Court justices in, turn the economy around, show everybody he was real. And now he's preparing to not drain the swamp, but basically napalm it. Carpet bomb it. I mean, I don't know what you want to call this, but I have been told that this is the gateway to the traction. That's how Trump does it. He enters it at one irrefutable point that they covered up what happened on 9/11, that they blocked the lawsuits, that Mueller was the guy that quarterbacked all that, and then he quarterbacked the entire cover-up, brought in 2 days after 9/11. And that it goes into Saudi Arabia, it goes into the Bushes, it goes into the Clintons, who set it up beforehand, it goes into Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda, and Trump has them dead to rights. He has all the documents, he has all the admissions, and he's letting them know, I have the ace of spades. So, just like Trump back, and we'll pull the clip up, during one of the debates told Jeb Bush, yeah, your brother did a terrible job on 9/11 standing down. The next day, he dropped out. So we're going to play that clip coming up. The media criticized Trump. Trump famously called into CNN a week after 9/11 and said, boy, those buildings sure felt strange, like there was bombs in them. He wanted everything on record that he knew. So, deep state working with radical criminal Islam, involved in 9/11, the stand down, all of it, the CIA building, Building 7 getting blown up. Trump is preparing and wants you to know and wants us to know, and I am the individual that is supposed to say the super hard, dangerous things up front. I'm very honored. I've asked for that position. It's a very honorable position, very dangerous position. But, yeah, there's the video. Donald Trump, 9/11 bombs exploded in the WTC towers. Boom. So Trump's very smart, laying his breadcrumbs to the point where he could turn around and go after him. He knows everything about this. So I bring you now for this segment the next Roger Stone. Roger, I don't think we can hype this enough, how big this is and how huge this is. I called you last night at 10:30 after I got off the phone and then received the information. You said that you were getting concurrent info, and this is just the beginning of Trump's big rollout, his ace of spades. I mean, would you call this? The economy's his real ace of spades, and telling the truth is ace of spades. But when it comes to devastating the deep state, this torpedo, this black arrow into the heart of smog, I mean, this is what needs to be done for justice, but it's also must strike complete fear into the deep state.
Well, I think the president has now only fully become aware of the extent of Robert Mueller's disastrous record as FBI director. It is indisputable that he systematically ignored multiple reports about a Sarasota, Florida flight school where 5 of 9 Saudi hijackers were training for the assault on America on 9/11. There were multiple complaints from neighbors about strange activities among these men who, according to flight instructors, showed an amazing interest in how to fly and take off, but no interest in how to land. This was reported to Jeb Bush's Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the same thing as the state police in, say, Louisiana or the Texas Rangers there in Texas, who complained repeatedly to the FBI, sent reports to the FBI, which Robert Mueller systematically ignored. So his role as being complicit in the cover-up of 9/11 is demonstrable. The president himself is going to ultimately make the case. But it's the tip of the iceberg in terms of this quote-unquote public servant who Lindsey Graham describes as beyond reproach. The first three suspects he arrested in the anthrax matter were the wrong men. The fourth man he ultimately arrested died mysteriously in custody. There is no question that he let three innocent men rot in a Boston jail in order to cover up FBI mafia informant sources in the Whitey Bulger matter. He had Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted pedophile, on the FBI hook as an informant, which explains why Epstein was always able to escape more serious charges such as child trafficking.
That's right. Robert Mueller is confirmed to be the main handler of the main child trafficking. You heard it here first. We'll be back telling Jeb Bush, you better watch it, buddy, after what you did standing down in Florida and after what your brother did in D.C., and now Trump is preparing to start releasing the fact that the deep state was complicit working with radical Islam to carry out 9/11. Here's the president.
Obviously, the war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake, all right? Now, you can take it any way you want, and it took Jeb Bush, if you remember, at the beginning of his announcement, when he announced for president, took him 5 days. He went back. It was a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. Took him 5 days before his people told him what to say, and he ultimately said it was a mistake. The war in Iraq, we spent $2 trillion, thousands of lives. We don't even have it. Iran is taking over Iraq with the second largest oil reserves in the world. Obviously, it was a mistake.
So
George Bush made a mistake. We can make mistakes, but that one was a beauty. We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East.
But so you still think he should be impeached?
I think it's my turn, isn't it?
You do whatever you want. You call it whatever you want. I want to tell you, they lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
Okay. All right. Governor Bush.
And there's another clip, too, with him saying, you screwed up on 9/11. You stood down in Florida. Your brother stood down. You guys did a terrible job. We're going to get that clip for you as well. We've also got the clip coming up in the next segment where he talks about bombs in the buildings. So, again, this is really, really serious. The point is, Tucker Carlson has on some of the families where Mueller, on record, basically killed the investigation, didn't let them have the info to sue. And if you expand on that, we have the article on Infowars.com, Trump to go after Mueller for 9/11 Saudi cover-up. President about to drop the hammer on former FBI director for burying Saudi involvement in the attacks, as Roger Stone just mentioned. But this is coffin nails. This is kryptonite to the deep state, Roger. And again, the specific thing that I want to relay to everyone is, the exclusive here is, this is only the beginning of what Trump is going to start releasing. And he's the president. He has the right to declassify anything he wants. And he's letting them know, let's just say folks are letting them know, that that's going on. So what does that signify? What do you make of this development that this is starting and that folks want the deep state to know we're coming for them?
Well, I think the president is building the backfire necessary to terminate the partisan inquisition being led by Robert Mueller. I mean, that story in yesterday's or the day before's New York Times about Rod Rosenstein, who very clearly wrote a memo to the president advocating the firing of FBI Director Comey, did not think it would be made public. Trump, as it is prerogative, made it public. This embarrassed Rosenstein in front of his deep state buddies, where he was trying to have it both ways. He is furious at Trump, and his payback is the appointment of Robert Mueller. It is as clear as day. So he is acting in his self-interest. He has conflicts in that he has gotten his first job from Mueller. He has conflicts in that he approves the FISA warrant personally. He's conflicted, more conflicted in this case than Jeff Sessions is. He needs to stand down or be terminated. So I think the president is laying the ground for the termination of what is a partisan witch hunt. People need to know more about Mr. Mueller. He is not the white knight that Lindsey Graham and others in the mainstream media have portrayed. His role during and after the 9/11 matter needs to be examined. The fact that he is the man who mules the uranium specimens to Stockholm to close the deal for Uranium One at behest of the Clintons shows that he is a bipartisan leg man for the deep state. And he is complicit, therefore, in the largest treasonous financial crime in terms of dollars in American history.
And it's attempting to overthrow a duly elected president when we have the FBI Justice Department conspiracy to keep him from getting elected. Then they try to stop him from getting in. They tried to not let the delegates be seated. Then they've been waging war against him, his whole family, you and I. Roger, I'll tell you, I called you last night about it. I've discovered whole new next level. Democratic Party has been caught red-handed in my personal life trying to actually wreck my family again. I mean, there is no end to these people. I've got to sue them now. There's just, they are so diabolical. They are so crazed. And then they use Aleister Crowley as the Democratic Party operating system. I mean, these people are beyond anything you could ever imagine.
It is really, really extraordinary. But what tells me is Trump's taking the gloves off. For too long, the early Trump attorney's piece of legal advice was bend over and hand Robert Mueller the Vaseline. Turn over everything. Waive all executive privilege. Give Mueller millions and millions and millions of privilege.
Make him God. Let him violate all these laws.
Right. Ignore his use of material from FISA warrants, which is still the linchpin of this whole scandal. What Rosenstein struggles to cover up today, what is being used to harass me and Paul Manafort and others. So this tells me Trump is going to war. It is essential the American people know who and what Mr. Mueller is. It is not us claiming this. You can go online, look at the terrific story about by Howie Carr about how Robert Mueller, as U.S. attorney, let three Italian men rot in a jail who he knew had nothing to do with a mob murder there in order to cover up for paid mafia informants who worked for Whitey Bulger. That's extraordinary.
And now the president is telegraphing that he's going to start releasing the cover-up, the stand-down of 9/11 that implicates the Bushes, Mueller, who ran the cover-up itself, and the Clintons, because we know Trump is really upset behind the scenes that it's the Bushes and their syndicate that are more effectively fighting his agenda than even the Democrats right now. And Chuck Todd now has come out and said President Trump is winning, Democrats reeling, close quote. So Trump now knows who to target, doesn't he, Roger?
Well, look, the poll that I would like to see which nobody has taken. There is a new poll that shows the two top front runners of the Democratic Party, old, tired, sick, and bereft of ideas, but still just as greedy, Hillary Clinton, and Uncle Joe Biden, a man who is literally around the bend, a guy who keeps going around threatening physical violence against Donald Trump, when in fact Trump's got 20 pounds on him, a much longer reach, and in my opinion could put Joe out in one shot. One shot. Just an opinion. So these are their nominees. I'd like to see them stacked in a legitimate poll, Trump versus Hillary, Trump versus Biden for 2020, and I think you'd find the president would crush both of them. If he ran against Hillary again tomorrow, he would crush her by a larger margin.
And that's why Michael Moore panicked. He went on Bill Maher this weekend and said, we've got to have an uprising. A million people surround the Capitol. Don't let the new Supreme Court pick in. And he goes, because Trump's going to win in 2020. And America's coming back, right. And they are crapping their britches.
No, and they're absolutely right. We need to have an uprising. Circle their circle around the Capitol, demanding a Supreme Court justice who believes in the rule of law. Be there. Surround their surrounding. That's my view.
Are you beginning to see how explosive this investigation launched by Mueller and all of those conspirators is? It's getting to be very, very dicey and very confrontational, and it could uncover much of what happened at 9/11, more so than any other factors. So these people attacking Trump better start thinking very closely about how far to go with this continuing investigation of Trump, because he's just going to come back and hit them with 9/11 or something like that. And I think Mueller and them did protect the Saudis and so forth. And so this is getting very, very dicey. Oh, what I want to play here next is a family member represented by her attorney who appeared on Tucker Carlson earlier in the week. And this is the family that Alex Jones earlier mentioned in his conversation with Roger Stone. So here we go with a family member expressing her own sentiments and her reservations about what's really going on 9/11. Listen to this carefully.
There were 19 hijackers on 9/11, and of those 19, 15 came from Saudi Arabia. Ever since the day of those attacks, the family members of some of the victims have been pursuing financial compensation from the government of Saudi Arabia. But one of the biggest obstacles to that compensation was FBI Director and now Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. It's an important but not often told story we want to bring you tonight. Kathy Owens lost her husband on 9/11. Jim Kreidler is her attorney. They both join us tonight. Thanks very much, both of you, for coming on.
Thank you.
So first to you, Kathy. Tell us how you believe Robert Mueller has stood in the way of receiving compensation from the Saudi government.
Well, ever since 9/11, almost immediately after, the Department of Justice, which was at that time, he was the FBI director, they've covered up and stifled the investigation into who was responsible for supporting the hijackers.
Why would they do that, do you think?
You know, I think there's probably a variety of reasons. Maybe, you know, everyone has a different reason and they all came together in a perfect storm for a cover-up. I won't know until we see all of the documents that are still being unnecessarily classified.
Yeah.
So, Jim, the suspicion that the Saudi government played some role in the attacks is longstanding.
Yeah.
I don't want to relitigate it here, but I'm just trying to get to the nub of Mueller's involvement in this. What role
sure.
did he play?
So from the moment of 9/11, President Bush's focus was on Iraq and Saddam Hussein.
Right.
And he didn't want to hear about Saudi Arabia's role. Saudi Arabia was an ally in the war against Iraq and a supporter of the president was good friends with the Saudi ambassador, who, by the way,
right.
he and his wife gave $25,000 to one of the government agents who were helping Hazmi and Mihdhar, the two terrorists. So, you know, there is this huge body of evidence that Saudi government officials prepared for the hijackers' arrival, helped them, got them money, English lessons, safe houses and apartments, and provided the aid without which it would have been impossible, according to the FBI agents who were working the case, for the terrorists to succeed. And President Bush and Director Mueller, instead of furthering that effort to find the whole story, quashed it. Interrogations were shut down. Documents have been kept secret. And that was continued by President Obama and by then Director Comey. In President Obama's case, largely to accommodate his desire to see the Iran nuclear deal passed.
That's right.
And the reason we are here, and our plea, the family's plea to President Trump, is to declassify the documents. There is no reason for thousands of documents that reveal both the Saudi role and our own government's cover-up for 17 years to be kept secret. And
well,
it's
on that, I fervently
today.
Agree with you. Right. And in the darkness, all kinds of theories flower. And so it's best to know. And I agree with you completely. And I wish you both success in that. Kathy, you too. Thank you for joining us, both of you, tonight.
Thank you,
appreciate
Tucker.
It.
You listen to that and you begin to wonder what really did happen on 9/11. But there is another interesting thing that actually occurred. And you could say the Jersey girls are the ones. There were four ladies who had their loved ones die in the towers on 9/11. And Christine Bright Weiser, Patty Cazarza, Lori Van Alten, and Mindy Kleinberg were residents of New Jersey and helped lobby the U.S. government to carry out an investigation into the terrorist attacks resulting in the formation of the 9/11 Commission and the subsequent report released by the government. So that occurred way back then. Without these four Jersey ladies coming forward and pushing and pressuring, there wouldn't even been a commission investigation, 9/11 commission investigation. And some say that it was a whitewash, and that's my opinion. They allowed people to testify, but they didn't publicize who some of the people were and what their testimony was. There were all kinds of problems with 9/11. There were explosions early in the morning and so forth. And it just goes on and on. And so we're going to follow this second hour, this first hour tonight with a second hour about 9/11 psychology. I've repeated it here lately several times, but I just feel like repeating it again. Charlotte Littlefield and I interviewed Fran Schur. Fran Schur is right on top of how to blow the lid off of 9/11, and it has to do with psychology. The American public has been traumatized into a state of trauma-based programming, is what some people have called it. Okay, and in that state, you're not your true self. It causes a dissociation. Some people have put it. There is a concept in psychology called dissociative identity disorder. And Charlotte and I interviewed a preeminent, you could say, doctor in the past on this subject. And he seemed to think that, the 9/11 event called trauma programming in a large number of Americans. Now, on the second hour, Fran Schur is going to go down and take that out in about 20 different articles that she published on A&E 9/11 Truth out in San Francisco. But I find that her publication is very good. And then I think we did a fairly good job in interviewing Fran Schur. And then also, Fran Schur's local group in Boulder, Colorado, did a 9/11 documentary up there. We're going to put that tag up there also, that hypertext link tonight, and sort of give you a little bit of an overall view of this thing. I'm going to put up the lawsuit, the complaint that the Russian has against BuzzFeed. I'm going to put up the stained glass window that the Fabian Society put up, and they're really behind the World Communist Movement. They started off in 1880-something in England, and they brought communism, well, socialism, they call it, to England. And then their disciples, are continuing to work against capitalism. And the problem with this thing is they've taken capitalism and they use such a broad brush that they just, you know, go after the term in a broad basis. But they don't define crony capitalism, separate it out from pure capitalism. And as a result, you're not going to get a very accurate or very honest assessment of capitalism itself. What has evolved through the all these big organizations, these banks are so big now, these corporate structures worldwide, and that's really what Trump has been up against. The world system has evolved into something similar, and I've described it as something like Spectre in the 007 books. And being big money, I think BlackRock is right in the middle of this with managing $4.5 to $6 trillion. And then also sitting on the board of BlackRock is Sheryl Mills, which is was the right-hand lady for Hillary at the State Department. And she's one that could... She sat in on the interview the FBI had with Hillary that was... it wasn't under oath, wasn't recorded or anything, but she sat there and she would have been a witness in this whole case. So that was highly... highly out of order. And then her notebook was taken and destroyed to destroy evidence. See, so they're all working together. The BlackRock, the Hillarys, the City of London, the big banking concerns, the Rothschilds' interest, the Rockefellers' interest, all this big money power is working together. And that is actually, Trump is not a team player. And he's on this, you know, let's level the playing field on trade. They don't want that. They got it already worked out between their entities and their institutions. They don't want any changes other than what exists right now. So as a result, he's not a team player. He jumps out and does things, and he's actually bringing back our economy. We've got more jobs, and they're looking for truck drivers now. We don't have enough drivers out there on the road. There's more trucks than they have drivers. And so we are booming right now. And so in this stage, you could say, of booming, then he's bringing back the American economy. Trump has a problem as far as I'm concerned. And that's, this ego thing is not controlled by him. He just flares off, see. He gets mad, he just hits back, you know, without thinking. Sometimes he says some things that can be easily construed or interpreted as hurtful, see. I mean, the political left has been, you could say, conditioned into a feeling state basis. Their feelings are really, you know, tender and stuff, and they love to have their feelings heard, and you're insulting me, and you shouldn't say things like that. And I mean, this is the way that they've been conditioned, and that's the way the political left has been managed, you could say. They're being managed by the ultra-capitalists on the right, who actually are not capitalists, they're crony capitalists. They have a monopoly of money creation through the ownership, private ownership of the central banks. That's why you see that they evolved into a European Union like they did without a truly democratic process, or it's not even close to being a democratic body of any kind. And all this appointment stuff and so forth. And that's why they're fighting tooth and nail to keep Great Britain in the European Union. They don't want that trading bloc to break up at all. But it looks like that trading bloc, the European Union, was destined from the day it was created with all the different cultures and the different languages, is destined to break up. Now, you had an offsetting factor here to a certain extent with the Muslim influx. You could say the Muslim crusades, you could say, you know, the hordes of Muslims streaming into there with the top level people, Bilderberg people, you could say, have allowed. And that's why Merkel is at the center of this conspiracy to allow those thousands into Germany to change the culture, to take over, to change things up. And, And cheap labor, too. That's another thing. But, you know, Merkel is one of the worst people you could say in Europe, because she's in there tight with the Bilderberg group. I mean, she's locked in with them. And in my opinion, this policy of the overrunning the Muslims into Europe was a Bilderberg idea. And that's my own opinion. Now, when you get back to what's happening here, is that we have an economy that is coming back, and Trump is bringing it back. His foreign policy stuff, especially in the Middle East, has been, he goes back and he attacks, you know. There's a false, you know, gas attack, but he'll go back and attack anyway. His intelligence being presented to him sometimes is not correct. It's purposely, intentionally propaganda to get him to go back to stir this thing up with the Russians and the Syrians and so forth. But none of these actors over there, you know, us, them, and so forth, are clean. None of us have clean skirts. We have all done things over there in the Middle East that we should all be ashamed of. So the problem of making assessments is that if you try to talk about American exceptionalism to the nth degree, forget it. I believe in this country, and I believe in the ideals it was founded on and so forth, but I'm not suckered into these foreign wars like our young people are with Afghanistan and Iraq, especially in now Syria. Trump knows 9/11 was a problem. It was an inside false flag or whatever you want to call it. It's got to be reinvestigated, in my opinion. Charlotte Littlefield and I have been pushing for years for a reinvestigation of 9/11, and we don't even know then if it would work out. See, but anyway, it does need to be reinvestigated, and we need to get down to the real truth, because right now it created 9/11 set this country up for a takedown into and transformation into two things. It's being transformed into a police state, and it's being transformed into a national communist state. And the left is being funded and so forth by the big money. They're being controlled and so forth to bring that about. And the ultra-capitalists, they want a bunch of peasants on the bottom they can control through benefits and entitlement programs. But they feed them this thing about the working man and all that stuff. But those are just hustles to get them to transform the country from free market Republic, Democratic Republic, to much more of a centralist, statist, communist state that the financial fascists at the very top will rule. And when I say financial fascism, I talk about people that own central banks. Private ownership of central banks is financial fascism. And that's what's going to be at the top of this pyramid if we don't wake up. But these people out there on the left, they're fighting for the poor working guy, but they're being used all the time by the ultra-capitalists. And the ultra-capitalists will only let them go so far. They won't let them go too far, or they'll cut them off, see, at the knees. So that's why they've been creating this dialectical conflict, see, to bring about change. And it is working, and those people on the left are being suckered into this, and they're helping to destroy the country. I want to thank everybody for listening this evening, and I hope that we put a few clips in there and gave you a little insight into what's really going on in the country. It ain't pretty, but we've got to work and try to bring about and reestablish the Democratic Republic in this country. But thank you so very much for listening tonight, and God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so very much, and we certainly appreciate what each and every one of you can do out there. God bless each and every one of you.